about microscopic integrability. I'll tell you what that means, and how if we have an integrable Hamiltonian that leads to a local formula, I'll tell you what that means too, or something like a state sum model for the low energy effective field theory. Okay, so here's an outline. I'll tell you some examples of integrability, some examples of local formulas. Try to convince you that the first implies the second, and probably the second implies the third, and then some applications to fermion systems in 3D, 4D. Okay, so the easiest integral system to understand is the toric code. So this is a lattice system. So you can imagine an infinite square lattice on the plane, or maybe a lattice triangulation of a torus or something like that. The geometry of the lattice doesn't matter so much. And the Hilbert space is a tensor product of Hilbert spaces that live on each edge. It's supposed to think about as like, well, we're going to have, you can think about them as like a Z2 gauge field, has a term on each edge. And the Hamiltonian just imposes the constraints that that Z2 gauge is supposed to satisfy. So the first constraint comes from these Plaquette terms, MP. These are terms, if you're thinking in like the Z basis, they're like product of sigma Zs over the edges of a Plaquette. And that measures the magnetic flux of the gauge field through that Plaquette. And in the ground state, all the fluxes are zero. So the gauge field is flat. And then these EI terms you can think of as, for every vertex, they're like electric terms, and they apply a gauge transformation at that vertex. So these are like products of sigma z's at all the edges incident at vertex I. Okay, so the ground state for this Hamiltonian is something like a Z2 gauge field, so it has some topological ground state degeneracy, so some interesting kind of phase arises from this Hamiltonian. But it's completely integrable. All of these terms commute with each other, not just with the Hamiltonian, but they all commute with each other. These are local integrals of motion. And if you diagonalize every one of these terms, it diagonalizes the Hamiltonian. Okay, so this is what I'm going to mean by integrable. You should think of integrable in the sense of, it's just like integrable in the sense of classical mechanical systems. Complete set of integrals of motion. Yes, locality is going to be important for what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to assume that my integrals of motion, good question, that all of these have finite support. So each of these operators is just acting in some bounded region. Okay.
Will they also mandate projectors?
They don't have to be projectors. If you have an integrable system, then you can sort of make the Hamiltonian, or you can construct a commuting projector Hamiltonian that has the same IR physics. Basically, your projectors project onto the charge zero states of all of your integrals.
Are they Hermitian?
Oh yeah, they should be observable. So they'll be Hermitian, and they'll be bosonic. Okay, so another example, a fermionic example this time, is the Majorana chain in 1+1D. So this is also a lattice system, and it has a Hilbert space that's a tensor product of Hilbert spaces for each vertex. At each vertex is like a fermionic Fock space, so the fermion there can either be occupied or unoccupied, and we have these creation and annihilation operators. And you can use those to define Hermitian operators, these Majoranas, and these two and all the rest of them anti-commute with each other, and they square to one. You can check that right under, let's see. Maybe I should say under time reversal symmetry, this one goes to minus itself, this one just goes to itself, and you can construct a Hamiltonian like this. It'll be invariant under that time reversal symmetry, and each term will be Hermitian and bosonic and finite range. And they'll all commute with each other. So you bring two fermions past each other, they anti-commute twice. Okay, so this is also an integrable system. And it has, in some sense, a little more of an interesting IR physics than the previous one. It's an SPT phase protected by this time reversal symmetry. And if you want to disorder the phase, if you want to bring this to a product state, you want to bring its ground state to a product state, then you need to layer 8 of these. Okay, so those are 2 examples. There's a natural question, which is which phases, gapped phases, can be represented by integrable systems? Or if you prefer, you can ask, what are the possible IR physics of integrable systems? So one physical reason to consider this question is that if you have a integrable system, like the toric code, I think like numerical simulations are very good at this, you can take each term and put a coefficient in front of each one, and they'll still all commute, you'll still have an integrable system, and choose these coefficients at random, and choose them with enough variance, then you get this phenomenon called Anderson localization. And this is a numerical computation that I didn't do of a typical eigenstate of an electron in what's supposed to model like random on-site potential that you get in like an optical lattice. So people can actually do experiments where they see this like localization behavior, and so the color is just like where the box is, and the size of the boxes is like the magnitude of the wave function in each of these places. So you can see that the wave function, rather than being spread out, and this is just a typical eigenstate, this is not even a ground state, the wave function, rather than being spread out, is supported in these clumps. And so this is the idea that the system, if it's Anderson localized, it doesn't thermalize. So a lot of the phases we study them at zero temperature. And as soon as you turn on any temperature, you might worry that all of the topological interestingness that we like to talk about simply goes away. And Anderson localization is a hope that if your system has an integrable Hamiltonian, then you can still have topological order at finite temperature. Or I shouldn't say temperature, I should say like energy density. So in something like this, you kind of see like SPT order, not just in the ground state, but like in every one of the states. Okay, any questions about that? That'll be the only non-theory. Okay. Cool, so what are some things that we already know about this problem? Well, we know that integrability implies no bulk transport. This is another way to say localization. So all of your conserved quantities are really computed locally, so they can't wander out of that region. You can't have any sort of mixing at all. And there's this old paper by Thallis that uses this idea to derive an obstruction to things like the chiral quantum Hall states. He shows that, he's using band theory, so it's there's a place to make his arguments better with non-perturbative methods. But it seems like if you have any edge transport, well, that then something weird has to happen, because inside you don't have any transport. How can you suddenly start to have chiral edge mode, something that transports charge all the way around the boundary of the system? Okay, on the other hand, if you have a non-chiral bosonic state, then there's a very nice commuting projector Hamiltonian by Michael and Jiagong, and I believe that realizes all non-chiral bosonic states. Yes?
I think you should define non-chiral to boundary
gappable. Yes, so I would say that non-chiral and boundary gappable are the same.
No, but I don't think by Michael Levin, you have central charge zero, but you cannot gap the boundary.
Yeah, like the Newton's two-thirds.
Like what?
Newton's two-thirds fractional quantum Hall state.
Well, for chiral.
I mean, like if the signature vanishes.
The same. You can't define that.
Say that again.
You can define non-chiral as boundary gap.
Okay. Well, I think what I mean by non-chiral, I understand only in the abelian case where it's something like the signature of the K matrix. I don't know what invariant.
That's not the only invariant. That's not enough. Yeah, another signature vanishing doesn't mean the model is non-chiral, at least in your sense.
Mm-hmm.
Hill-Lagrangian subgroup and the group of charges.
Mm-hmm.
well, is a module dense category, well, category is still a quadratic function, right, on the group.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have gap all along, and you have a random subgroup on the group of choice. That's not the same as just having vanishing signature.
Okay. All right, in higher dimensions, I don't know a easy thing to say here, except by saying that if it's boundary gappable, it probably admits a commuting projector Hamiltonian. And there's a construction by Kevin Walker that builds that commuting projector Hamiltonian from what the path integral assigns to like a ball. You sort of take a handle decomposition of your manifold, and so you know what you assign to each handle, which is just a ball, and then you know how they glue together, and that gives you a state sum model. It even gives you a state sum model for the Hilbert space. All right, so what about fermions? Situation is a little bit different. Well, I'll just focus on SPT phases. I've shown you the Majorana chain is an integrable system. That's this nu equals 1 topological superconductor. Thales's obstruction, I've been told, can also be used to rule out the nu equals 1 free fermion phases in higher dimensions. But there's some weirdness, like there's this paper by these authors out of Santa Barbara that shows that sometimes strong interactions can actually help you in your localizability. Okay, there's some possible obstructions to the phase in 2 plus 1D protected by an Ising symmetry, a totally unitary Zmod2 symmetry by Potter and Vishwanath, having to do with this phase is sort of like a decorated domain wall phase where your Z2 domain walls are decorated by Majorana chains. But when you have a loop of these things, if you don't do anything, if you just do this naively, then when you have a loop of these things, you end up with periodic boundary conditions for these fermions. But if you have periodic boundary conditions, then you get a ground state that is Fermi-odd. And so you start to have some problems there. And they say that this can be made into an obstruction in 3D, but it's not totally worked out. OK, so it's pretty different from the bosonic case. Now there are SPTs that we think don't admit integrable models. They all do.
But you need to break the symmetry.
Okay, so I don't know about this one, but the free fermion phases admit, at least in 3 plus 1D, there is a gapless boundary for the topological superconductor, nu equals 1. And that one, I'll show you, doesn't admit an integrable model.
So which direction? Say you have a model, binary model with a gap of boundary,
mm-hmm.
which do not admit commuting projector, which is do not admit an integral model reactivation.
Yes, that's what I'll show you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how can we start to understand this in a systematic way? Well, I claim you should look at the partition function for these sorts of things. And we saw in Anton's talk, there's a very nice formula for the partition function of the Majorana chain that even sort of works when we take into account time reversal symmetry, so when we consider unoriented surfaces also. And so these surfaces are pin minus surfaces. And if you look at the formula, it looks a lot like a finite path integral, like you're summing over a gauge field. There's some action. Well, the action is not completely local for the gauge field, but still you're summing over some e to the is and getting some invariant here called the Arf-Brown-Kerver invariant equals the partition function of this thing. Okay, so something like this, you can even show that there is no local formula. In a sense, there's no form that we can just define using the spin structure and just integrate to get the right answer, because this isn't multiplicative under covers. And that form would have to be additive under covers. So if you integrate the exponential, it would be multiplicative. And you can see that by just computing this for the projective plane, you get some eighth root of unity. But for its double cover, the sphere, you just get one.
Sorry, so what's your argument there? You're saying that locality requires the quantity be multiplicative under covers?
Mm-hmm. If you have some like characteristic class, say. But not if you have a finite path integral like this. Yes.
It's not a classical action which free.
Mm-hmm. It's like quantumly local, but not classically local.
Quantumly local, but classically local.
No, classical, classical. It's a sum over some field, some background field becomes quantum. That's called a quantum. And there's no way in classical.
So you want to use the non-multiplicative activity under covers to distinguish classical from quantum?
Yeah.
Well, you can do that.
What's that?
You can do that. Well, at least in this case. There's no characteristic class that can give me this invariant.
That's true.
Okay. Meanwhile, for these bosonic phases, there is a state sum construction every time there is a every time the thing is gappable. So if you have a non-chiral bosonic topological field theory in 3D, then you can use this Torreya-Vero state sum formula that you're kind of summing over all the ways that you can label the edges of your triangulation with your quasi-particle species, and then you get some 6J symbols on tetrahedra, and you multiply all those together and sum over colorings. Okay, there's some analogous formula in 4D that we saw some generalization of this just earlier today by Zheng Hong, and no such formula is known for chiral topological field theories in 3D. There is a formula that looks like you might be able to turn it into a state sum formula, this Reshetikin-Torreyev invariant. But this is really a state sum formula not on the three manifold you care about, but on its surgery presentation as a framed link with some labels in the three sphere. So it gives you it presents your three manifold invariant as a knot invariant in some sense. Okay, so there's this natural question to ask: which topological field theories have a state sum formula?
Isn't that the same question as which TFTs are fully local?
Fully local. This is what I mean by fully local.
In the sense of literature.
You mean fully extended?
Fully extended.
Yeah, so this is what we were talking about before. I'm going to show you an example of a field theory that admits topological boundary conditions. So in the sense that physicists talk about, we believe that it should be fully extended as a mathematical TQFT, but it won't admit a state sum model, and so it won't admit an integrable system that gives rise to it, and it won't admit a state sum model of the sort that I'm going to show you comes out of an integrable model.
So is this a definition of fully extended? Means having
state sum
formula.
Mm-mm. Is this the hypothesis? You put your manifold into cubes and you do a state sum model. That's how you.
I don't know how to prove cobordism.
I know how to prove it in dimension two, and that's what you do. I mean, you wrote down the formula in your talk.
Mm-hmm.
Different algebra.
Isn't that a question of what you put on? So when you do this sort of thing with a form, right, in your manifold. In principle, you could put in non-trivial things at all orbits, right? But I think when they say state sum, it just means something of edges and of points.
Oh, okay.
And for fairness, you call it something on angles.
Do you mean that? Or you can have also things on higher dimensional synthesis.
I'll show you what sort of formula that I get.
So let me just get some terminology. So we know that state sum gives rise to fully extended TQFT. So I will say some. But then, mathematically, the definition of fully extended TQFT is a more general than state sum model.
That's right.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, so I hope that these questions 1 and 2 are equivalent. So whether it emits a state sum model and whether it has an integrable description are equivalent. I'll show you one direction. So on an oriented surface, you can give a nice explanation of this formula, which we saw yesterday, that in the case of an oriented surface, this is just a sign, this Q is always even. And then the signs that we're summing over are the different ways of arranging, A tells us which of our edges have fermionic labels and which of them have bosonic labels, and then these signs come from arranging that tensor product in an invariant way. Okay, so there's going to be some similar story here. So what I want you to think about is the special thing we have when we have an integrable system is that we can ask for the ground states not just on a closed manifold, but on a contractible manifold, something like a ball. So for example, the Majorana chain, its ground states on an interval are twofold degenerate, something you don't see on a circle. It's an invertible field theory. So on a circle, you just see one state. You just see the bosonic state. But also on an interval, there's a Fermi odd state. And there's a symmetry, which you can think of as fermion parity, but I really want to think of as just assembled out of the Hamiltonian, whose charge distinguishes the two ground states here. So. With respect to say fermion parity. Well, let me draw it for you. So here's my picture of the Majorana chain on an interval, just two sites. So here are your C1, C2, and C3, C4. And there are two ground states. So this is the term IC2, C3. There are two ground states for this term. And if I close this into a circle, then I would have a unique ground state. So this operator commutes with the Hamiltonian, the local commuting Hamiltonian. And one of the ground states of this operator has sign, gets a -1 from this, and the other one gets a +1. So that's how they're distinguished by their charge. They're distinguished by their charge under the Hamiltonian, really, when I take this ball and close it into a sphere. So in this case, I have an interval and I close it into a circle. There's a unique ground state. And so the rest of the Hamiltonian on that circle gives me a conserved charge that distinguishes these ground states. And in higher dimensions, I do a similar thing. OK, so I'm using the finite support of these terms, and I'm using that they all commute with each other. So I'm going to call G-hid or G-hidden the symmetry group that I don't see on a manifold of closed manifold. And in this case, it's Z mod 2. And the idea is that once I specify the charge, I know which state I have here up to a phase. And so if I have two of these things, and I glue them, which means I have a ground state here and a ground state here, and I form the tensor product of these two states, and then I apply a projector onto the ground state here. Then if I look at the charge of this operator that I shouldn't have erased and the charge of this operator here, they add to the charge of this operator. OK. So if I have a triangle, a triangulation of my manifold, then what I think of is I have the system on this interval, the system on this interval, and the system on this interval. And I look at the ground states of each of those Hamiltonians. And here I get some ground state labeled by its charge, some other thing labeled by its charge, some other thing labeled by its charge. So if I call these labels like I'm suggesting a gauge field, so was the gauge field in my sum, then saying the charges add says that this thing is flat. And when I take this state and this state and I glue them together, I know that I get this state, but up to a phase. And that's the phase that I'm going to associate to this triangle. And then I'm going to sum over all labelings. And that's going to give me the partition function. Okay, and this phase integrates to the partition function of a bosonic gauge theory for these labels and whatever background gauge fields there are. Okay, so for example, bosonic phases have a very nice description this way. Once I specify, so I can either think about the SBT, I want to couple to a background gauge field now. So I'm going to have some data already on this interval, background gauge field, and then in a sort of group cohomology like lattice presentation of this system, I have G elements on vertices, and my Hamiltonian projects this into a state that's a sum over phi 0 and phi 1. Well, since I have this background gauge field, phi 0 and phi 1 are related by A. And the phase I get here is something built out of my cocycle, and it depends on phi 0 and phi 1. Okay, so this is the state I assign to an interval. Now to a triangle. Well, I should really split this up into three intervals, but when I glue them, it's just going to say that these phi labels on the boundary, on the endpoints, are just equal to each other. And I'll just tell you what the phase factors are. So on this one, I get this omega 1 of phi 0, phi 1. On this side, I get omega 1 of phi 1, phi 2. And I want to see what happens when I glue these phases, and well, the ground state here. And so I take this state, and then I take the tensor product of this state with its phi 1, phi 2 counterpart, and then impose that the two phi 1s are the same. So I get something like, now I'm going to sum over phi 1, phi 0, phi 1, phi 2. And then another constraint, it looks like phi 2 minus phi 1. This is a 0, 1 now, a 1, 2. And the phase factor of the other one is this guy. And then the state for all three. And now the thing is, I can eliminate phi 2 from this phase factor in favor of A, using this relation, which is sort of the defining relation for omega 1, that if I sum these two, it's equal to this plus the cocycle applied to A, so just a function of the background gauge field on these edges. Okay, so I can eliminate phi 1 here up to this phase. So this state is equal, once I sum over phi 1, this state is equal to the state here that entangles phi 0 and phi 2 times a product state of phi 1 times just this phase. And this phase is omega A. So when I do the state sum, yeah. Right, A is a background field.
So why do you have these constraints like phi 1 minus phi 1 equal A?
Well, basically, what you could think of phi is phi is giving me a local trivialization of omega, which is what I need to write down these ground states. when I have a ground state on an interval, the background gauge field is always exact anyway. So.
The consequence of the Hamiltonian prediction?
Yes.
One of the terms of the Hamiltonian field is when I have an interval, it's right.
You can think of it that way. I believe that's equivalent. And then we're integrating out the internal one, and that's giving us this phase.
I thought they're basically degenerate norm method. If the length is large,
it's degenerate in the sense that there's only one state that I get here, right? I told you that G hit in this case is trivial. So here I get a unique ground state on an interval. That's right. But this is the picture of that ground state. I sum over all labels, phi 0, phi 1, phi 2. Or sorry, on an interval, it's just labels phi 0, phi 1. I sum over those labels with some phases. That's the ground state on the interval.
Elements of the group G. Phi 0 just tells you which basis element.
That's right. So another way I could just like start with some system of these phis and then coupling it to a background gauge field. There's like a term in the Hamiltonian that does that coupling, and that term enforces these constraints. Okay, so when I sum up all these phases, I get the partition function as I should. And sort of this trivial state sum model where I have no colorings that I need to label over, that I need to sum over, because there's a unique label for every edge. New ground state on the interval. Okay, but in the case of fermions, some of these ground states are going to be bosonic, some of them are going to be fermionic, and that's going to be a function of the label of the degeneracy here, this little a, the G hidden gauge field, as well as perhaps the background fields that we include. Okay, and it's just going to be some function because fermion parity commutes with all the terms in the Hamiltonian. So I can simultaneously diagonalize my hidden symmetry and fermion parity. So I just have some number. Okay, and I'm going to have some sign problems, just as Davide and Anton elucidated in their paper. And this is going to amount in a, let's see, if I just think about these signs, I get some kind of dependence on the triangulation of my state sum model. I think of this as an anomaly. And the precise form of the anomaly means that for the bosonic part, so this is the action for the bosonic field theory, this should also depend on background fields as well as the hidden label A, should cancel this anomaly, which means that its derivative should be something like W2 beta or W2 plus W1 squared beta, depending on how the fermions transform on time reversal symmetry. But I'm going to mostly restrict to orientable manifolds, so we don't have to worry about that. Okay, and then there's some way of correcting. If I impose this anomaly for the bosonic part, and I keep track of all my signs when I order my tensor products, then there is some function of the spin structure or the pin plus minus structure, and beta signs and cancels this anomaly. And so the state sum that I get when I do this process of just gluing the local Hilbert spaces together looks like this. So there's going to be some normalization factor. It's going to depend, well, partition function depends on the spin structure or the pin structure, as well as all the background fields. Some normalization factor, then a sum over all the hidden labels. I told you why these were closed, but I didn't tell you why, what you get is gauge invariant, but suppose it is for now. And it's a sum of a product of a sign coming from just the fermionic data, the spin structure, and the charges of the edge labels, and then some bosonic data, which could be more than a sign. Okay, so when I don't do this sum, when I'm just looking at a term like this, there's a name for this cohomology theory. It's called the e-cohomology. As far as I know, it was invented by Dan. This cohomology okay, well, I heard about it from you in your paper. It's a cohomology theory of beta is some element in HD minus one of all the background gauge fields. So let me just call the background gauge group G with coefficients in Z2. So it just tells you if I have a face with some A, it tells me the fermion parity of the state that I get, as well as some omega and HCD of BG with coefficients in U1 so that D omega equals W2 beta equation I wrote previously. Okay, so in general, so e-cohomology is the same as this super cohomology classification. But the general state sums that I'm thinking about are you start with something like an e-cohomology class, and then you sum over part of the maps to BG. So you integrate out some of this gauge field. So you turn part of your background gauge field into a dynamical gauge field. That you might say.
I didn't really follow, but why are you restricted to this particular cohomology theory? Why can't you have more complicated, more homotopy groups?
More homotopy groups where? So this is what I got just by summing over the states that I get by quantizing the theory on each of my faces in my triangulation, gluing the states together, and then sort of disentangling to map them onto the rest of the simplex, and then collecting all those phases. All those phases are just
this is in any dimension?
Yes. And I think that, well, I argued by this hidden symmetry that the labels for the faces, you just need to keep track of some extra gauge field. So that's why I'm just thinking about pi 1. And what else is there to say? The bosonic part is really like a bosonic field theory. It doesn't depend on any sort of interesting data. So it is, I guess there's a little bit more general thing I can put here is I can put some kind of like oriented Bordism kind of eco-homology. So this bosonic part could also have dependence on like Stiefel-Whitney classes of different sorts. That's what I get just from saying that the phase I get here doesn't depend on the fermion labels here. And it doesn't depend on the fermion labels there because it just depends on which states I have here. And that's just data about the gauge field that labels each edge.
So this is BT, this is T would contain the fermion parity in it, right?
No, G is the gauge group of like your background gauge field. So so Z is a function of like a spin structure and a map to BG. So
the G do not contain fermion parity. It's only bosonic symmetry.
Yes. Okay, so you can do some work to figure out what happens with the mayor on a chain. Maybe I won't talk about this. It's difficult to talk about the unoriented cases. Let's just get on to this. So a state sum model like the kind I proposed comes from an integral system is impossible for this mu equals one topological superconductor. Basically because I have some four manifold called K3 that I know the partition function of this theory has to give me minus one. But K3 is simply connected, so my state sum is just a single term, and then there's no bosonic topological field theory in 4D that can give K3 minus 1.
What's the 3D means 2 plus 1?
Yeah. No, 3D, sorry. Little d. 3 plus 1.
3 plus 1?
Yes. K3 is a 4-manifold, 4-dimensional spacetime.
So, new implies self-filling fraction 1?
Nu equals 1, I mean like the generating phase of this is E16 in 3 plus 1D.
You want to get single Majorana on the volume?
Yes. Max?
Does K3 admit a smooth structure?
Yes, K3 is smooth. And actually there's a interesting comment to make here, which is that, so I got this partition function from the cobordism classification. We look at smooth cobordism. And the smooth cobordism group for these sorts of pin manifolds in this dimension is Z16. But for topological manifolds, you get a Z8 plus an extra thing, Z2, from this manifold that doesn't admit a smooth structure. So the conclusion is that like this invariant is really like a, you know, K3 is going to be, well, let's see. Yes, so this TQFT detects like a smooth bordism in a way that topological bordism would not be able to detect. Yeah?
You mean the space time cannot be defined in general, or just on this K3?
Well, no, the argument goes, if I have an integrable model, which is just a collection of like terms in a Hamiltonian, then I'm just thinking about acting on contractible spaces, and I can triangulate K3, that's possible, and I can use what I know about this Hamiltonian to get a state sum model that just can't give me this answer for K3.
But actually, this original one PSP, Lucas and Shea, they have this work one model. What happened?
Is that true?
But it's a gauge. So if you gauge the fermion parity, then there is certainly an exactly solvable model.
Well, then you're getting rid of the dependence on the spin structure, correct? And so then you're getting some much more simple invariant, probably.
It also becomes non-invertible.
Mm-hmm.
So this topological does not have a time world symmetry or no symmetry at all?
Oh, so here K3 is invertible, so I only needed to talk about like what state sum you get on an invertible triangulation.
No,
sorry, on an orientable triangulation.
This is the 16
but,
classification. That's a, do you have a time world symmetry?
Yeah. That's with t squared is minus 1.
Are your state sums that just have vertices and edges? Because I would have thought the K3 has higher homotopy than where you could put the variables in a state sum model.
Mm-hmm. My argument is that perhaps there is a state sum model that gives you this result, but not a state sum model of the sort that comes out of a integrable system.
But I have two standards. First, what's the base point? You say K3 invariant minus 1 does not make any definite sense, but you can multiply all invariant by minus 1.
Oh no, these are bordism invariants, so anything null bordant should get 1. So 2
okay,
K3s
so,
is null bordant.
Okay, so there is a base point, which is S4 is 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or the empty 4 manifold
okay,
is 1.
And the second thing, I wouldn't say this detects smooth structure. So I think when the policy detects smooth structure means you have two smooth manifolds, which are not a deep involved, but a home involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you weren't distinguished.
Yeah, so here it's like I have two manifolds that are topologically bordant, but not smoothly bordant.
Yeah, we're defining, you know, smooth manifold, not topological. We won't say that because
okay.
We are something.
It's a bordism invariant theory. It's not as fancy as these other 4D TQFTs.
We are something much more.
So what is the boundary of this new one state? It's a single wire operator,
single Majorana.
Mm-hmm.
Single
Majorana.
But it also has a gap to the boundary.
Okay.
Could you say again how t squared is minus 1 goes into your discussion?
So I didn't need to tell you about that for this construction, because K3 is oriented. But it goes into changing how the, well, sometimes the state sum model has to be modified when I have some orientation where now my simplices of top dimension have some sign. And when I'm gluing faces with opposite orientation, then the state I have on either side has to be glued with this like something like time reversal, some orientation reversing symmetry. And so that's how it's going to go into the state sum. Next.
Sorry, I'm really confused. You're saying you cannot do, probably I think you're saying here that you cannot have any exactly solvable model that will give you minus one on K3.
That's right.
No, local commuting projection model.
A local commuting projection.
But there are Walker Wang models that. What is the sense?
Oh, probably. So when you gauge fermion parity, you get some other invariant on K3 probably.
No, but there are bosonic theories that give you minus one.
What's the signature?
Invertible though.
No, this is signature 16. Yes, two unit, but we have about 16. What you have done is blocking you. That can be done by bosonic P15. With this
mm-hmm.
You just take the Criera theory and use our lattice model.
Yeah.
That will determine what you do. You can show small amount of security with a 16 that
mm-hmm.
is exactly this minus one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay,
but
I also have this covertic value, but there are this
invertible.
Yes, this is a bosonic action that I get is the action of an invertible theory because there was only unique ground states on interval.
Well, because you cannot, so you cannot have simple charge which is one quarter and more modular?
Well, I think you just need to put the level high enough and you'll be able to see it. Because it's just signature divided by some.
So signature is, what is signature?
It's 16.
For the 16, yeah.
So you just need central charge, which is just one quarter.
Yeah, something.
You need modular theory where central charge is one quarter. I'm saying that those are not confused.
Yeah, just take a square root of I. That's a phi over phi.
The one that we had SO3 level 6 was non-modular, but other.
That's one non-modular.
But the other modular.
Yeah, they're modular. SO5 level 5. I think I have to find level 5 of zero charge 9-4.
Okay, move on. All right, so given that conclusion, well, I would like to think about like whether two layers of this topological superconductor maybe have a state sum model. Well, that has a nice description in terms of like a decorated domain wall, but it's a little bit complicated. So I can move down to something I already don't know about, but there's some evidence on either side of a 2 plus 1 D phase with this unitary ZT symmetry that I mentioned earlier. There's a Z mod 8 of these things. And there is a nice way to compute what the invariant is. It's like a decorated domain wall. It's a sense that you look at something like, so here's a picture of not the 3-ball, but the 3-ball with the boundary identified at antipodal points. So this is a picture of RP3. And this horizontal disk here is not a disk, because its boundary points are identified in antipode pairs. And so here we have some RP2. And that RP2 is a domain wall. You can think about a gauge configuration here that has some holonomy along this circle. And then this is Poincaré dual to that generator of the first cohomology here. And a spin structure on RP3 is going to induce a pin minus structure on RP2. And then you look at the Majorana chain sweeping out this RP2 in spacetime, the picture of the 2 plus 1 D spacetime, and the partition function on this RP2 is going to give you an eighth root of unity. And that's going to be a Bordesen invariant of this spin 3 manifold with a gauge field. OK, so that's how the co-Bordesen theory tells you that you can compute this invariant. The question is, can we get it by a state sum model? OK, so there's a first guess that's pretty nice. So first, we don't have a, we'll just look at like ecohomology or supercohomology. And we're going to get the order 4 phase doing this. And we choose the only thing we can for beta, which is dA over 2. And you take an action like this, where you can read what this action means. It says that a dA over 2 flux, so a flux in this Z2, has electric charge 1/2 quantum, and is also fermionic because of beta. So that's how you can read this theory. And you can check, you take d of this, you get the right anomaly. You get this eco-homology class. But if you compute it on RP4, you get I rather than the eighth root of unity. OK, so maybe one guess how to proceed is, well, if we had I and we had 1, then we would get this eighth root of unity. So the first thing you can do is be like, oh, let's just add like a trivial theory to this one. Trying to get this eighth root of unity, maybe one of the other ones. And well, if you do something really naive, like add a trivial theory to this, you don't get something invertible. In fact, most things you try, you don't get something invertible. Well, I have something that gives an eighth root of unity, but I don't know whether it's invertible. So something like this, you can write down, now we're going to have a Z2 gauge field that we're going to sum over, and I'm going to write an action just like the other one. But now because we have this Z2 gauge field, there are two terms in the sum for RP3. One of them just gives 1, and this term and this term cancel out. And the other one gives either I or minus I. And so I get an eighth root of unity from this kind of state sum. But it's hard to tell whether these things are invertible. I don't have some general way of knowing if I take an invertible field theory, or if I take like an SPT, and then I gauge part of its symmetry group, whether I get an SPT again. All right, so I'll just summarize. So I argued that a gapped integrable system gives a TQFT with a particular kind of state sum model, and that particular kind of state sum model cannot possibly give you the partition function for one particular SPT phase, but maybe others. And so some challenges are to rule out or construct a state sum model for this unitary Z2 theory that I told you about, and also for 2 layers of the free fermion phase in 3 plus 1D, protected by time reversal symmetry. And also to understand these unoriented pin state sums more concretely. There's besides the formula that I showed you, there's another interesting formula for the unique non-trivial SPT phase in 1 plus 1D with T squared is minus 1. And that already has a state sum model, but it's not a state sum model on the space-time. It's a state sum model on the double cover of space-time. So you can think about, like, locally, it looks like you're doing a state sum on the space-time. But you have 2 labels, one for each sheet. And then when you go past an orientation reversing place, then a branch of this cover, then the 2 labels swap with some signs, maybe some I's as well. Okay, so there's something to think about already in 1 plus 1D. And a general challenge is, when does gauging an SPT give you an SPT again? Okay, thank you.
So you said this new one example described has no this kind of state sum or super cohomology or whatever this kind of comes from description.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the conclusion, well, maybe it has a state sum description, but it doesn't have it. It can't arise from an integrable model.
But usually the state sum construction, suppose it's a state sum is a number.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think We believe that one it have a convenient Hamiltonian.
The state sum is a number, right? Not the rest of the number.
Or this state sum is a
number. No, I mean, even the whole, the result of it. It wasn't Grassmann integration, right? But the result is got some number.
So the question whether this new to one case have a is Grassmann number state sum description.
Well, these state sums do have like Fermi signs that are getting mixed around. So you can think about them as having Grassmann numbers. And whether whether an edge has a Grassmann number on it is this data.
Yeah.
Or whether a face.
Well, I try to understand. Yeah. So this new to one example does have this Grassmann number state sum description.
No. I don't know one. I don't think so.
So basically, you say
yeah.
If you do this Grassmann number state sum description, you may be missing some dynamic SPD state.
Mm-hmm. And it's believable from a physical perspective, in that if you break time reversal in this phase, you get some edge transport. So you can try to make one of these like transport arguments, or maybe from a mathematical perspective, is that well, maybe all of your state sums have to be not just smooth Bordism invariants, but topological Bordism invariants. And this is not a topological Bordism invariant.
Is the topological Bordism what? Look again
the same. Z8 plus Z2. So it reduces. This Z16 gets reduced to Z8. And then there's another manifold that doesn't have a spin, that doesn't have a smooth structure.
Oh, okay. Right,
yeah.
So when you apply this Gluing map, we assume on the boundary it's always a bosonic function, or in general, they also.
No, it's just some state on the ball and some other state on this ball, and then you glue them with the Hamiltonian terms. You just tensor them, and then you all the overlapping Hamiltonian terms you place there.
But the fermion number can be all.
Yes, yes. The fermion, yeah, these could be odd states. So when you tensor them, you have to do this like a Grassmann tensor product.
So
get these causal signs.
Change the fermion number on the boundary.
What do you mean fermion number on the boundary?
Kind of when glue them on domain, there's a single
fermion. Oh well, when you have one of these commuting projector Hamiltonians, say the modes at the boundary, there's kind of like degeneracy there usually. I'm not imposing any edge physics. Probably the symmetry is just broken.
Yeah, but later you can project them out if you have some extensive degeneracy.
If you add some edge degrees of freedom?
Yeah, you still
so you're saying you could modify the state sum by putting edge degrees of freedom on these balls and then gluing not just with your bulk Hamiltonian but with some edge interaction?
Yeah, then apply some projection to this.
They both give you the partition function, I think. Yeah.
So you suppose you could write down a state sum, but you know, it comes up here that's not in room. What would be so terrible about that?
Oh, well, I'm trying to answer this question of like integrability. So I want to know like.
Right. So I think maybe then I can ask like what is the connection between integrability and the statement that you're underlying?
Well, in the bosonic case, invertibility is going to imply integrability. In the fermionic case, it seems not, and I don't know enough examples to formulate a conjecture of which ones are integrable exactly.
So for this fermionic convolutional matter, we know that if you break convolutional symmetry on the boundary can be gamma. But do you know that whether if you do not break convolutional symmetry, whether the boundary can be gamma?
It can be.
So even the boundary is gammable, may not.
Mm-hmm. It has some complicated non-abelian order.
Yeah.
There is no direct proof, but it's very strongly suspected. There is no direct proof, but it's very strongly suspected.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a gappable with some topological order.
There is some gappable topological superconductor with thermal fault conductivity one quarter, and then if you assume that it's only Z16, then you
are things are consistent.
Mm. Right. It's this argument by like vortex condensation.
Yeah.
But not for new. The vortex condensation doesn't give you the new equal 1 or new equal 3, it only gives you the even
new. Even new, right? Mm-hmm. But then all the new, there are some guess, but not proven.
Well, there is a Walker-Wang construction for something that you don't know is connected to an odd new, but which has the same thermal Hall conductivity.
I see.
So then you can argue that if the classification is Z16, then this must be 1.
Right. Yeah. So another way to get this conclusion, I guess, is to say that, or another way to state the conclusion is that just because you have gappable boundaries, which we think might be the same as fully extended, then you don't get a integrable system.
But
you might get a state sum.
Actually, from your school, the boundary is not gappable. They're creepy.
But I think also
this is a 3+1 dimensional from a superconductor. So when do we know for sure when you do 1, the boundary is gappable without breaking Penrose symmetry. That's what I'm trying to say is that there's a one possible resolution for the second issue is that for this new to 1 state, the boundary somehow is not gappable without breaking Penrose symmetry.
It would be nice to extend it for the same as state sum.
So then we don't have, then we understand why there is no state sum.
But you're not really using.
There could be such a way out.
Your argument doesn't really use time reversal, right? You're putting it on an orientable. You're using this K3 argument.
Right, this one doesn't use time reversal. But it does use the fact that, well.
You're using thermal. Somehow you're using this thermal Hall conductivity. But you can find a model of theory with central charge 1/4 and just build a Walker Wang model based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it will give you. Partition function is K3-1.
Okay.
But that needs to make that have 3-dimensional topology order.
Well, that's not an invertible theory.
Invertible. So we know this one, for instance, SO3 level 6 is.
So you start with modular category.
This SO3 level 6 is non-modular, but you can gauge fermion clarity and get a modular one with the same central charge.
What does it mean to gauge fermion parity in SO3 level 6?
I think it's actually if you take the full SO3 level 6, it is modular, but then there is kind of a restriction of that where you get rid of some of the sectors which is.
SU2 level 6, I understand.
Yeah,
SU2 level 6 is modular.
Let's just take SU2 level 6.
Yeah, that would be, it's very hard to not fold.
But I don't know how to get from SO3 level 6 back to SU2 level 6.
There is one.
No, I don't understand. From where to where?
From SU2 level 6, I understand how to go to SO3 level 6.
Okay.
That I understand. Yeah. Going back, I don't think there is, but that's what you alluded to. You said you gauge fermion parity and you go to a theory that is modular out of SO3 level 6.
It's not unique, and it's not always going to be done. But there's a conjecture, there's 16 different ways to do it. There's a 16 fold based conjecture, which is if any pre modular length, there's exactly 16 different ways to extend into. And we know after 2 set of example 1 to refer to the force of them like the title. And then I think for the one thing, I know the other two are exactly that 16. So if you go take SU2 level 6, take only the integral speed, it's pre modular, it's a fermion field. There are 8 different modular categories, contains this what the subcategory. But if you define the equivalent as distinct, there are 16 different ways. So that's what it
is. So the SU2 level 6 is one of them?
It's one. There are 16, there are 8 different categories, but there are 16 extensions. So I think the general conjecture is 16, probably 16 different ways to gauge fermion parity.
Why do you call it gauge fermion parity?
It just, and then I guess the formula is my talk about gauging, ordinary symmetry. And it's for the same thing.
Is it the same as summing of a constructive?
It's just the same thing you construct is made of spare. But now instead of keep off, you want them to be really graded. So that here is what summing.
It's an ordinary symmetry? Like you're gauging an
ordinary
symmetry?
No, Fermion parity is just going, it's not a unit symmetry. Just
it's like a 1/4 symmetry?
The one mathematical word we're using called modularization. You ask for pre-modular category, what's the minimal one which can make it modular? How many different ways to do it?
No, that, I understand this question. What I didn't understand, why you said that the procedure is gauging the parity.
I think you can, just do the...
Very, from my old-fashioned perspective, terminal parity is through bilocation.
Okay.
But how can you gauge that?
It's just a confirming number for the two pixels,
yeah.
Right? Well, no, that you cannot do, but you can sum over construction. That's a quick, that's it.
And then what?
The Fermi theory is your partition function depends on spin structure. You sum over the partition, you sum over spin structures, you get the answers which are.
So if you do that for SO3 level 6,
and you
can sum over spin structures.
Probably do it in multiple ways because you can tensor with another fermionic with invertible fermionic.
Well, different ways because you can sum the spin structures with different weights.
The same.
I think that this has a name for discrete torsion or something.
Right. But if it was a symmetry, it would be discrete torsion. If it,
right, but here there isn't, then that's my
problem.
Well, there are under a whole bunch of fermionic theories that you can use to invertible to fermionic theories.
Yes. Just on spin manifolds in three dimensions.
Yes. No?
No. There are, of course there are these multiple copies of P plus AP superconductor.
And there are 16 of them, right?
Oh,
yeah, so these 16 things must correspond to taking your theory, tensoring one of these invertible ones, and summing of the
structure. It's not a spin tensor, but there's a construction.
Okay.
It's a little bit substantial if you have to do them twisting. But basically it is that, you take a fermion theory, which is pre-modular, and then you take a bosonic theory with a specific choice of an electron. And that's what this bosonic theory will decompose into a spin ticket. It depends on spin structure. So, but it's not unique choice. Okay, the discrete torsion is just a big half of two, even if you're not very useful.
Does the resulting theory always have a fermion?
Yeah, it always has. There is very important not a kind of fermion. It has a specified fermion.
I think what you get at the end is the bosonic theory, but does it have a...
Yeah, it has a fermion.
Oh, so presumably, if you do fermionic Kenyon condensation on that, you would go back to the...
You do
for that
position, and then you throw away half of them.
Any other questions?
Think again.